And I... no, that isn't going to work. Ladies and gentlemen, the James Whale Radio Show. Okay, welcome to the program. Robbo is here. Hello, Robbo.
Hello, James.
Oh, he's leaping around like one of those lovely people in the summer with a straw boater, a blazer, and probably wearing a cravat, aren't you, old chap?
Just a red or a mauve t-shirt.
You always have to let things slide, don't you? Anyway, listen, nice to have you with us. Welcome to the program. Got a great show today. We have one of the hottest properties in music on the program. I'll tell you who a little bit later on, but she is a real catch for this program, I think. Don't you?
I think so. I think she's great.
Yeah. So anyway, we'll be talking to her. Stay tuned to find out a little bit later on. But here we are. Listen, I got to take some time out to talk about. Did we talk about this last week? But ever since. Well, for most of this last month, it seems to me, down in Kent, in the Garden of England, Operation Stack has been in place. And this is where they park all the lorries up on the M20. Now, this is not only flipping annoying for the people who live in and around Kent, but as we head into the summer, annoying for lots of people who wish to go to the continent via a ferry or the train from Dover, because the port of Dover has been completely clogged up for the last month or so. It's all down, well, it's down to two things. It's down to striking ferry workers. They're striking because the British Competition Commission actually told Eurotunnel that they could not run ferries as well, because they own some ferries, they were running ferries, so they made Eurotunnel close down the ferries or sell them on. This obviously proceeded to put some people out of work, and those people are striking. This is just a brief, there's more to it than this, but this is briefly what happened. So they're striking, that's clogging up the port. Then we've got the problem of those asylum seekers over in Calais who want to come over here, who are getting more and more restless. What the French are supposed to do, I have no idea. But we've had, over the past couple of weeks, we've had people now breaking in. Sadly, people have been killed as well. Breaking into the tunnel, getting into the tunnel, heading for Britain. It's like if you're in the southeast of the country at the moment, it's like you're under siege. And nobody seems to be doing anything about it. What on earth? Oh, well, I'll tell you what, David Cameron's off on holiday. They're all off on holiday. Well, I suppose they have private planes and private jets and goodness only knows what to get out of the country. But where does that leave you and me? There are no government ministers coming down to try and sort this out. As far as I know, David Cameron isn't really having much to do with the with President Hollande in France and trying to sort this flipping problem out. And I tell you, it's going to cause an enormous amount of upset, and it's going to make some very, very angry people perhaps do things they shouldn't. It needs to be sorted, and it needs to be sorted now, because part of Britain, this is where we come in and go out of the country. A lot of our stuff comes in and goes out of the country via Dover. And at the moment, it's like that part of the country is under siege. And it's working both ways. The French are having just as much in the way of problems over there as we are over here. So two things. First, we have to sort this immigrant problem out. And we have to sort the fact that you should not be able to go on strike, whether in England or in France, and close the country down. I don't care what kind of problems you have. You have to find another way to do it. You cannot suddenly say, I'm sorry, but you can't travel because I've got a problem. It's just not on. So somebody somewhere better get a hold of this situation before things get even worse. And if you are traveling on holiday, and if you're catching a ferry from Dover, or you're using the Eurotunnel or Eurostar, then I suggest you make sure, first of all, particularly if you're taking animals with you. A lot of people go for a summer holiday now. They take their dogs or their cats, and if they have a passport, of course, you can. But you don't want to be stuck in a car for 6 or 7 hours with your animals in there, or your children, for that matter. And if you go by ferry, of course, once you're on, you cannot, your dogs or your cats have to stay in the car. So I think this really is a real problem. And if you have been into the southeast of England when this is on, you know that not only the motorways are blocked and they're stopped, they park the lorries on them so you can't get up and down them. But then a lot of people, and you can't blame them, the truck drivers and just people going about their business, use the side roads. Everything comes to a complete halt. And it doesn't seem like any of the politicians are interested. So I'm annoyed.
I can tell.
I am very, very flipping annoyed. Anybody has anything they want to contribute to this at any time, feel free. Get in touch. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com. JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com. Same address if you want to advertise on the podcast, or if you want to be on the podcast, if you think there's a reason why you should be on here as well. So we move on. And of course, if you're a new listener to the program, it's always nice to have new listeners. Put your hands up, give yourselves a pat on the back. Fantastic. We also, Rob, like to say hello to those people who are living far and wide who listen to this program. We have listeners in Australia. We have listeners in America. We have listeners. Well, where else have we got listeners? You look at the statistics.
Yeah, France, Spain, a couple in Germany. Not many in Germany, just a few, handful.
Well, that's no good. We want a few more in Germany then, don't we?
Yeah. Russia. I've had a few in Russia pop up.
Really? Well, yeah. Hi to Russia. What's hello in Russian?
Hello.
Hello. No, I don't think it is, but it'll do. Is it Nostrad? No, not, no, that's something else, isn't it? Anyway, someone will tell me, I'm sure. Yeah, and loads in, we've got lots in America. Some radio stations in America take this show as well, don't they?
Yeah, Canada.
In Canada as well?
Mm.
All right. And for some reason, we're quite big in the Middle East, aren't we?
I've no idea why.
Yeah, Saudi Arabia, we seem to have quite a few listeners in. But moving swiftly on. So anyway, if you want to get in touch, JamesWhaleRadio@gmail.com. And somebody called Mr. Floppy Dick, I think, on Twitter. Was it Floppy Dick? I think it was.
Floppy?
Who says, why? I beg your pardon. Wants me to go on a different radio station somewhere. I'm sorry, mate. I haven't got time. I'm working about 4 or 5 stations. I just don't have time. I wish I did. But there we are. Now, shall we go into the interview that I've got lined up before we do anything else?
Oh, yes, please.
Because this is a lady I've known for a long, long time. In fact, I knew her before she was the famous celebrity. Well, she's just brilliant. She's just brilliant. I've loved her for years. She's a great soul singer. And now she has become the darling of the West End. Ladies and gentlemen, let's take some time out with Miss Beverly Knight.
Sitting in my room and I'm on my own. It's cold outside and I'm feeling alone. So I turn that dial and my radio's on. I hear James Whale and my troubles are gone. I hear James Whale on the radio. I hear James Whale and his podcast show. I hear James Whale on the radio. James Whale and his podcast show. James Whale on the radio.
So, Beverly, You must be the hardest working person at the moment, I would have thought.
Oh, bless you. I'm sure there are others who work just as hard. But I work hard, yes, but I absolutely love what I do. And that's the difference. You when you love what you do, you could do it all day, all night, and just get on with it.
Yeah, but, you know, I've known you, well, I was going to say since you were born, and that's completely untrue, but I've known you off and on for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I seem to look older, but you don't.
I don't know why. I don't think so. I think you look the same.
Oh, well, you're very sweet, but I know for a fact that ain't true. But I mean, do you work out, Beverly? Do you what do you do to keep so fit?
I do work out. I'm pretty fastidious, I've got to be honest, about what I eat and keeping fit and healthy, because you can't do what I'm doing at present, you know, on stage every night and that. You just can't do it without being fit and without being well. And so much of that is not just going down the gym and pumping iron and what have you. It's making sure that you're eating right and at the right times and all those things. So, you know, I put them together and, you know, just hope that I can maintain my wellness and my fitness so that I can keep doing what I do.
Well, we'll talk about what you're doing at the moment and what you're going to do in the future later. But let's go back to the beginning. And yeah. I think the first time I heard you sing was in the Midlands. And I think I was doing something for a radio station in the Midlands at the time. And that's where you were born and brought up in the Midlands, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Yeah, born and raised in Wolverhampton. And then left there when I went and did my degree and then came to London to pursue music. But yes, I've been making music for years now.
You never lost your accent either, have you?
No, it's softened. It was it was probably more pronounced when I first started, but it's still there. I'm still very much a Wolverhamptoner, and it does make me laugh when people, you know, from abroad will say, "Oh, are you from London?" And I think to myself, "You are the one person who thinks I sound anything like a Londoner." Yeah, but it's softened, but it's still there.
When you were growing up, was soul music as a bigger thing as it is? I mean, I presume it was bigger because in the particularly in Birmingham, there was a really big soul sort of sound going on, wasn't there?
Yes, absolutely. I grew up being surrounded by like-minded people. So soul music was I mean, the first thing I listened to as a child was Sam Cooke. And then from there, you know, Aretha Franklin, Chaka Khan. And then with the things that were popular at the time as a child growing up, people like Shalimar and Earth, Wind and Fire. So I gravitated towards that. And I was so immersed in that. It was only when I actually started my career, which is 21 years ago, oh my gosh, that was when Britain was very much in Britpop fever. So it was lads playing guitars and that whole sound. So when I first broke through, what I was doing was seen at that time as unfashionable. But of course, as we all know, in music, it works in cycles. So what was unfashionable then is very much in vogue now. So I just kept plugging away and doing what I do. And thankfully, the taste of British music buyers has come round to kind of liking music more akin to what I'm about, so that's been a good thing for me.
Funnily enough, I was in Birmingham, I think, just before last Christmas, and I introduced a friend of mine called Lee John. You probably know Lee.
Yes, I do.
And he has to be. I'm not sure how old Lee is because he won't say, but he's another one who hasn't aged, and he played in this club. I was doing a radio program from Birmingham, and I had to be up very early in the morning, and I said, "I'll come along, I'll introduce you on stage." And he said, "Oh, we'll have a few drinks and we'll have dinner afterwards, darling." Well, after 2 hours and he hadn't stopped, I had to leave.
Yes, that sounds like Lee to me.
I mean, he was just going for it, and the crowd were wild. He didn't stop hardly between any record. Or
no,
song,
he
shouldn't refer to it as a record.
No, you're all right with me with records. He's another one. He loves what he does, and the love of what you do will just keep propelling you on and, you know, And then, of course, you've got an audience behind you who are with you, and they carry you through. And it's only when someone's kind of from the side of the stage, you know, someone official kind of looking at you with consternation, saying you're running over time. You're like, oh, 2 hours have flown by. I better get off this stage. But when you love what you do, you just keep doing it.
Yeah. Have you been to America? Have you broken the American market? Did you have hits in America?
Do you know, I've never commercially released anything in the States in all the years I've made music, which is probably a surprise, but it was just the circumstances in which I found myself. The record label that I was signed to is no more. And at the time that it would have been absolutely right to start to record things in the States for release in the States, that record label started to have really major problems, and they shut down their whole American wing, and it was a bit of a mess. But I believe that things happen for a reason, and the time will come where I am able to release over there. But a lot of people in the States know me kind of like a cult British artist, so I'm not unknown. I'm just not known on a kind of major scale.
Beverly, I would have thought after your success in Bodyguard, you would have been huge in America.
Well, to be honest, because the Bodyguard was, you know, a British production, British rights and everything, the only Americans who knew about it was the theatre fraternity, which is huge, obviously, very much centred in New York. And, of course, everyone here who already know about me anyway, and you know, tourists who saw the show. So it doesn't really quite work like that. But my master plan is that once I have completed all my theatre contractual obligations, I'll have an album out, and then that will be my chance to go over and just show America what I'm all about. So that's what I'm looking for. I try to see the positive spin in everything.
I could not believe, when I heard you sing in Bodyguard, I could not believe. I mean, I think you were better than the original.
Oh, bless you.
Did you? I mean, when you were singing that song, you must have been channeling. Do you know what I mean? Were you thinking of the original when you were singing it? Because it was, in a way, it was just it must have been amazing for you as an artist to stand on the stage, suddenly go in. Did you know how it gripped the audience when you were singing it?
In all honesty, when I am on a stage and I'm singing, I go into, it sounds so cliched and I apologize, but it's true. I go into a whole different zone. So I am singing and I'm using everything I have to communicate the message of the song in the best way that I know how. And it's only when I stop and I'm back in the room, to use that well-worn phrase, and that's when I'm like, and there are people here and there's an audience and this is my reality. But when I'm actually in that song, it's like an other reality. It's very difficult to explain. But so at that time, I don't really appreciate what's going on, you know, how the audience is feeling, you know, step by step and note by note. It only comes to me at the end. And then at the end, I'm just delighted. I'm just delighted they enjoy what they hear and more importantly, what they felt.
Was that really it for you as far as starting you off in this being one of London's biggest stars in the West End in musicals at the moment? Was it Bodyguard, do you reckon, that really first touched everybody?
Yes, it was. I mean, that was the first role that I'd ever done in the West End. I'd done lots of theatre prior to that, but that was when I was much younger, and I'm glad for it because it really helped me to hone my craft and prepared me for the role as Rachel Maron. But I think that was the first time where not only kind of theatre aficionados, but people who are from the music industry and maybe had, you know, kind of gone on to other things and other artists and that, saw me do what I do and what I did and thought, yeah, oh yeah, God, yeah, Beverly, yeah, that's a strong voice there. So that really helped to propel me kind of all the way down the line, which led me to having high expectations when I went into my current musical, which is Memphis. So going into Memphis with the Bodyguard success behind me was fantastic for me. And I don't think I could have done Memphis as much justice had I have not had Bodyguard first. I'm so grateful that I got that role. I really am.
I mean, that was your big break, wasn't it? That was like the big break everybody waits for. And quite often, yeah. Sometimes after you've been in the business for a long time, you think, is it ever going to happen?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely right, James. You know, people wait for years and years and years for an opportunity to come their way. And sometimes, even with the most talented people, it just never arrives for them. For whatever reason, I don't know. But it did with me. You know, my first very lucky break was obviously way back when I got signed initially. And then this has been the second wind, you know, for me. And I'm honestly so, so, so grateful for it because it's just changed the whole trajectory of where I'm going now in terms of theatre and music.
And you can enjoy it more now because you're more able to appreciate what it's like when you're very young and you get real success and you suddenly have hit records and everything and then it all falls away. It's difficult to get it back and appreciate it, isn't it?
Yes, that's right. And, you know, everybody needs to value what they have in their hand. And I think when you're younger and you're just working hard and you're pursuing your career, sometimes you don't stop to say, oh my gosh, look at what I've done. Look at where I am. Look at all the people who have enabled me to be here, as well as, you know, your own hard work. You're so busy chasing that you're just not appreciating. But for me, at this point in my life, I'm doing what I want to do, which is fantastic in itself, but I'm able to stop and say, wow, I'm in a great position. I'm grateful for it. Life is really good right now. And then carry on working hard. I don't know if this opportunity, you know, in theatre had come along even 10 years ago, I don't know if I would have really have understood the value of it the way I do now. I certainly do now.
Tell me about Memphis. That's the current show. I haven't seen Memphis. I don't even know what Memphis is about.
That's all right. You shall see it soon. I was so attracted to the role, A, because of the music, and B, because of the story. And basically, Memphis is the story of the birth of rock and roll through the eyes of a DJ called Huey Calhoun, who's loosely based on a real-life DJ called Dewey Phillips. And he becomes the first man to play race music, as it was called then, another derogatory terms, which we now all know and call rock and roll. He was the first to play it in the mainstream, in the center of the radio dial, instead of the upper fringes, which was solely the preserve of black radio. He falls in love with a black club singer, Huey is white, in the 50s in Memphis, where it is absolutely not just against the law, but, you know, they could both lose their lives over it. And so it charts their relationship, their success, and I won't ruin it and tell you what else happens, but it's really funny, it's really poignant, and it's got some killer songs, and it's a completely original piece as well.
Are there well-known songs in it or not?
No, these are all new songs written by David Bryan, who you'd recognise as the blonde, curly-haired keyboard player, co-writer with John Bon Jovi in the band Bon Jovi. He wrote all the songs, and they're just great. He's a real kind of blues R&B man, even though he kind of does rock. And so the songs reflect the period, but they're not slavishly copying the period. They just have a flavour of that kind of early 50s energy rock and roll, and a lot of gospel, a lot of blues, and a lot of soul. It's fabulous.
I believe you're on stage most of the show, is that right?
I am, yes, I am.
How many songs do you sing in it?
In total, I think it's 12 or 13, something
Golly.
Like that. Yeah. To be honest, when I'm off stage, which is not much, but if I'm in the wings, I tend to join in. I just can't help it. I join in even on the bits where my mic is completely off. Everybody laughs at me because they're like, will you not ever stop singing? I'm like, nope.
And what are there must be a really good band as well, presumably.
Yes, there is. And the band is on stage, so they are part and parcel of the action. The very first scene of Memphis is, my character is called Felicia Farrell. It's her brother Del Rey's club in which Felicia sings. And the very first scene is inside the heart of that club with Del Rey, Felicia's brother, and my character Felicia singing a song with all the punters who are there. And the band are very much in it. So they're in costume and everything. I love that. I love that we've got the band on stage with us, so you can really appreciate them instead of being hidden under the orchestra pit like most productions.
The first musical like this I ever saw, the first one I can remember, was Buddy at the Victoria Theatre, and that must have been back in about 1990. And the thing that amazed me was about halfway through, the audience get up out of their chairs and just start dancing.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. I love when you watch a theatre show and people start getting out their seats, you know they're having a great time. And with Memphis, because it's a story, you're watching the story of two people's lives unfold, like a real drama. So people are just sat there on the edge of their seat. You can often hear them calling things out, or, you know, sometimes you'll hear sniffles of tears. You'll always hear laughter because the whole thing is very humorous. And then by the end of it, they're out their seats for the last number, and these are songs they don't know at all. So for us, we just feel like, wow, we're doing something. We're really reaching these people. They don't know these songs. They're hearing them for the first time, but they're out their seats. That's a great feeling.
And which theatre are you on?
I'm at the Shaftesbury Theatre, which is the one at the top of Shaftesbury Avenue on the corner with High Holborn. Yeah, if you ever come down the Gower Road from Euston,
I know
it's that
I know
one
exactly.
That's on the left.
Yeah, I know exactly where it is. Because, and presumably people can still get tickets?
Yes, they can. You can book your tickets directly at the box office or any of the major ticket outlets. They're all selling tickets for Memphis.
Well, I'm going to get Mrs. W to find us a dog sitter so we can come up and see it one evening. If I do, I'm going to come round and say hello.
I'd love that. I would love that. That would make my night.
Well, I'll have to make sure it's a night when you're on and not one you've taken off.
Oh, yes, do. Don't go when I'm on holiday.
Now, listen, you're going into Cats as well. This is unusual, isn't it? I've never spoke to anyone who's sort of done one really successful musical, then moved on to another one and is already booked to appear in a third. I mean, that's amazing.
Yes, it's kind of taken me by surprise. But I tell you, when Andrew Lloyd Webber picks up the phone and calls you and asks you personally to take a role in one of his musicals, oh, you'd be mad not to say yes. And that's exactly what happened. So when he offered me the role of Grisabella, I thought, Grisabella's the one that sings Memory. Yes, that fantastically iconic song. Well, of course I'm going to say yes. I'll make this work. However I have to make it work, I will make it work. And again, another fantastic opportunity for me that I wasn't about to let slide.
Did he come and see you in Memphis or in The Bodyguard? Do you know?
I don't think he's seen Memphis yet, but he's planning to see it. yes, he did see Bodyguard. I didn't know at the time, but he had seen it and he loved it. So I guess that's where it all came from. And a lot of the people who work for him have seen me in both in Bodyguard and in Memphis. So I guess he had a team of people who were, you know, kind of advising him as well. I'm just glad he picked up the phone.
Is he frightening or not?
He's really, really chilled, actually. He's not at all scary to me. I mean, the first thing we did when we met was he was telling me all about, you know, how Cats as a musical came about. And then I chimed in saying, oh, yeah, I'd studied T.S. Eliot at A-level. And then he was like, oh, wow. And then we started this whole boring thing about English literature and T.S. Eliot and stuff. I just thought he was just a really lovely guy who absolutely musical obsessed. And the geniusness, if there is such a word, it kind of just shines from him, you know. You know, you're not talking to someone who is regular, shall we say.
Because you'd think, wouldn't you, after all this time, he'd be a bit bored with it and think, oh, I don't really care, I'll leave it to somebody else.
Exactly. And the fact that he is still so hands-on, so in the middle of it. I mean, I sang the song through, I sang Memory through for him. And, you know, he's there, the musical supervisor was there. And he was so thrilled and still kind of enraptured by this song, which he had created all those years ago. And I did think to myself, wow, you know, when I grow up, I want to be you because I love how infused you are about something which has been rolling on for 30 plus years. That's a real, real joy to see.
Did you know, had you ever sung the song before?
Never in my life. Never in my life. I knew the song as much as anybody else in the general public, you know, knows Memory. It seems to be one of those songs which you somehow know. Everybody's grown up with it, or at least have come across it. But I didn't really know the lyric. I didn't understand the context of where it was in the show, so I didn't know the drama behind it or anything like that. I just knew the melody and a few lyrics like everyone else. So now it's a case of looking at the song, really getting into it, really understanding the emotion so that when I sing it, I can give it full weight.
And so are you rehearsing and learning Cats whilst you're performing in Memphis?
I will be. I have the score for Cats already, so I'm doing some kind of preliminary homework on it. But I will be rehearsing Cats in the daytime when we get to October. I'll be rehearsing Cats in the day and on stage for Memphis at night for at least 2 weeks. And then I leave Memphis. I do a week of rehearsal for Cats. Then the following week, I'm in and we start.
By that time, I think I'd probably have a nervous breakdown.
Fine.
Now, you've got an album you're working on at the moment.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I'm not busy enough, you see. I thought I'd throw something else in there.
Is this going to be songs from some of these shows, or is this going to be Beverly Knight like she used to be?
It'll be, me doing what I've always, you know, done in the past, you know, soul music. It won't be show tunes or anything like that at all. It'll be original songs, most written by myself, co-written at least, and going back in the studio with a bunch of musicians, recording it all down live. You know, the real thing. That's what I want to do more than anything. I think we're surrounded by a lot of stuff which is really over-processed, and I want to strip all of that away and just bring it back to the band with the voice and the background singers, and that's it.
Have you got people together to perform this?
Not as yet. I will be probably recording the album in Memphis. I went to Memphis to do research before I got the role, before I rehearsed the role, and I was so inspired and kind of lit up by what I saw and heard. I thought, I want to come back here. I want to record my album here, write all the songs at home, and then go over to Memphis and get it all recorded there. So there might be some kind of mixture of Brit musicians and Memphian musicians.
Then you'll come back and you'll tour, presumably.
Yes, I will be touring. The album will be out by the spring of 2015. And I'm planning to tour by at least the autumn of 2016. It takes a while to get all the technical stuff together, but that is my plan because I love touring.
I would then pencil in 2017 for a holiday.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think I'll need one by then.
Are you on tonight?
I am on tonight, yes.
Looking right, well, I'm going to let you go and have a little rest and recuperation.
Okay.
And I'll, listen, if I can make it, Memphis is on until when?
The 17th of October. So do come and see me. That would be just fantastic. I'd love that.
Thanks so much for doing this, Beverly. And I'm sure lots of your fans will be holding their breath until the album is recorded and comes out next year.
Oh, thank you, James. Thanks so much for talking to me. That's brilliant.
See you later, Beverly. Bye-bye. Bye.
Bye.
You are listening to James and Rob on the James Webb Radio Show.
Well, I tell you, listen, I am going to... It's always a problem, Robbo. If Mrs. W can't get dog sitters for us to go, why don't you come with me and we'll go and see Beverly?
Oh, that'd be brilliant.
But you can't dress the way you normally dress, all right? It's not acceptable.
Oh, I'll go to Debenhams and I'll get one of them personal shoppers.
Well, you don't need to go that far. Just don't wear a dark suit with white socks and trainers this time. I mean, it looks like I'm taking somebody out who's just been released for the day.
I normally am being released for the day, though, that's the thing.
Yeah, but I don't want it to look like that. Now, here's a subject that really perplexed me when I saw the story in the papers the other day. It's a story that actually, to be honest, I thought had gone away. I thought we got over this ridiculously stupid arguments of stupid people. Pro-life protesters have managed to get a clinic that specialised in abortions in southeast London closed down. And I can't understand for the life of me why people are still so, you know, it infuriates me because some people have a difference of opinion. Look, we live in a free country. You can have a difference of opinion. I have no problem with people having a difference of opinion. What I have a problem with is nasty, horrible, vitriolic people who want to intimidate and frighten other people who are going through a very traumatic period in their lives. And a woman who's decided that she doesn't want to have a baby, who finds herself pregnant and wants to have that pregnancy terminated, should be allowed to make the choices she needs to make with the people nearest and dearest to her and her medical advisors. What she doesn't need is a number of yelling, screaming banshee types with pictures quite often of some of the most disgusting things, you know, dismembered fetuses. And there, you know, you can all have your opinion. In my view, we live in a free country. We're all allowed to have a difference of opinion. But people who are bullies and people who are nasty, I will not tolerate. And if you have a difference of opinion about abortion, fine. And you can write letters to MPs and you can do what you want. You can, you know, you can get on Twitter. You can even call me and have your say. But what you can't do is suddenly go and try and inflict your views on somebody else and tell another person what they must and must not do with their own body. Now, I cannot understand the nastiness. And a lot of these people, well, you know, religion leaves me cold, as you know. And whether you're Christian or Muslim, some of the extreme things people do of all religions, it just leaves me cold. But look, it's a free country. You can believe and do whatever you want. But I don't believe you have nobody has the right to interfere with somebody else who is doing something that is legal and legitimate. And quite frankly, I think you should be ashamed of yourself putting another human being through the pain and torment. And I know some people say, oh, well, you know, a fetus is a human being. Well, that's a matter of belief, all right? And if you believe that as soon as the sperm meets the egg, then that's a human being, that's up to you. I don't believe that. That's up to me. And if that's what you want to believe, fine, you can go and talk to people. But I don't think you have the right, when somebody else has made a decision, to go and threaten and intimidate them. I just don't. By the way, if you want to take umbrage with what I'm saying, email me, jameswellradio@gmail.com. And if you want to be on the podcast, leave us your phone number. We'll give you a ring and you can come on and you can put your point as well. And then after you've put your point, we can all discuss it. I put this out on Facebook earlier this week because I was so annoyed when I read this story. And these are some of your thoughts. I said, pro-life protesters use intimidation and harassment to close down an abortion clinic. Your thoughts, and this is what you replied to me. Mabel Locke says, let's go back to the 60s, where a dear friend of mine died from an illegal abortion. Judith Arzian says, these people who demonstrate should mind their own business. It's up to the individual if they want children or not. It's a personal choice. It's not an easy choice to be made. Grief lasts for a lifetime, and regardless how the life has ended, they should put themselves in the shoes of women who have been raped and can't cope with the thought of having the rapist's child, let alone the law that gives the rapist rights to the child after it's born. Who are we to judge reasons why? Everybody has their own reasons. Too many nosy and judgmental fools in this world. To make that decision is difficult enough without being harassed for making it. They need stopping. That's the protesters. Judith, I think that's absolutely right. I'm trying to find some that don't agree with me. Mark Gibbs says, how many unwanted children are up for adoption? Do the children that live in care have a good standard of life and care? Are there some people in society that shouldn't be allowed to breed? These are relevant questions when the abortion question is on the table. We don't have very many people talking gay. I can't find any, actually. I'm interested that the vast majority of people who are talking about this on Facebook are women, because quite often you find the most vociferous anti-abortionists are men. And it has, you know, it doesn't affect a man. And I'm sorry, oh, well, you know, it's my son, my child. Yeah, but you're not carrying that child. It is the decision, isn't it, of the woman. Wendy Wright says, wrong, women have a choice. It is generally them who are left holding the baby when a relationship ends. People should never judge anyone who has an abortion, provided it is done as soon as possible after conception and they have a valid reason. Thank you, Wendy. Sharon says, when it comes to such a serious and sometimes heartbreaking decision, to make it makes my blood boil with these so-called do-gooding, know-nothing idiots that really haven't got a clue. A bit like social workers without children, says Sharon. And Joanne says, any woman would never make a decision lightly to have an abortion. No one has the right to judge another's situation. And finally, Barbie says, I'm all for the right for a woman to decide. If she wants to abort a fetus, these bloody pro-lifers should just keep their views to themselves. Are they going to adopt the child when it's born? I doubt it. We had loads and loads of response to that. I couldn't find any to put on the program today of people who agreed with the demonstrators, with those people who feel so moved that they have to offer quite often threats of a physical nature, not only to women who choose to have an abortion, but often to those medical practitioners who are helping women out. As I say, if you want to get in on this, you can email jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. And for goodness sake, let this become something that in the future we just don't have to talk about anymore, because nobody interferes with anybody else. Rob, I do feel I've been speaking far too much.
Should we play some music and then I'll do some tech talk?
I think that's a very good idea. What music would you like to play?
Whatever's on the piece of paper.
We could play Black, who's a singer-songwriter.
Yes.
And the new single, When It's Over.
Should we do that now, then?
Well, you're the producer.
I'll press the button now.
Think we're more than seeming to want the things we wanted then, but only now, without me or you. I'm not pretending that this was everything that's ending. We can go to hell. That's where we want to go. But why would you? I hear what my heart sings. It's over, not over. We mean it. Why would we pull it apart? When we remember before the altar, slipping the white dress from your shoulders to let it fall like virgin snow. I hear what your heart sings. It's over, not over. We made it. How could we pull love apart? Everything's colder when you're gone. And in starting over, the longer it takes me, pushes the answers further away. Don't say it's over until you know what's wrong. 'Cause it's not over until it's really gone. It's never over until it's over. It's over.
So there we are. That was Black. He seems familiar to me.
Yeah, he had a song in the 80s called Wonderful Life.
It's a wonderful, wonderful life. No need to laugh.
Oh, yes, Wonderful Life. Yes, yes, yes. That was him, was it?
Yes, that was him.
But he wasn't called Black then, was he?
No, he was Colin Verncombe.
Was he? No wonder he changed his name to Black. Anyway, it's nice, this single called When It's Over. Don't forget, if you want to be on the programme, if you would like to speak on the show, all you've got to do is email jameswhaleradio@gmail.com and leave us your phone number. We'll get back in touch with you and call you when we're recording the programme. You can have your say, whether it's on abortion, whether it's on Operation Stack, whether it's on some of the other news stories or something that you think we should be discussing on the James Whale Radio show. Just get in touch, jameswhaleradio@gmail.com. And for those of you who've joined us for the first time, hello.
Hello.
Hello. Hello. Don't forget, we've got over 90-odd programs now. And if you go to our website, jameswhaleradio.co.uk, not only can you pick and choose which programs you want to listen and look at the guests on there, you can also go to the shop. And with this beautiful weather we've had, you need a James Whale baseball hat with the James Whale logo and a James Whale t-shirt as well.
Mm.
And then I could pose in it and tweet it out.
Yeah.
That would be a good thing, wouldn't it?
I suppose that's a business purchase then, isn't it?
Yeah, yes, that must be, you know, that would be against tax, wouldn't it?
Okay, we can do that then.
Yeah, good. Shall we do tech talk?
Yeah, go on, tech talk then.
No, you do, this is the bit you do.
Okay, I'm ready.
Are you? Yes. Go on then, talk tech.
Car hacking. Have you seen the thing in the news that people can phone into people's cars and take full control over their vehicles?
Oh, don't be ridiculous. How can they do that?
A lot of these new cars are smart cars. They're connected to the internet while driving.
Are they?
Yeah.
And listen, I'm driving that Ford at the moment. I'm test driving the new, brand new Ford Focus at the moment. And actually, you can talk to the computer and it knows what to do. Is that the sort of thing you mean?
Yeah, it's a smart car. So if it's got a connection to the outside world by a mobile phone, etc., hackers have demonstrated and proven that you can phone into it, send commands to make the car brake, steer, put the fans on, windscreen wipers, so you constantly put these squirty jets on. Very dangerous stuff.
What, even if you just have a mobile phone wired into the car?
Yeah, if you've got one of these cars that can link. You know, when you have an emergency, you press a button and it links, and those kind of cars.
Oh, right, not the ordinary everyday car.
No, an ordinary everyday car that's, you know, a dumb car that relies on just the driver only. No, there wouldn't be a problem with that.
So, I mean, on this car I'm driving at the moment, it's got this system where you just press a button and it'll park it for you.
Yeah.
So I don't, is that a smart car or not? I don't know.
Well, it is a smart car, but there's only a couple of cars that have demonstrated that the hack works on. So I'd imagine the car that you're driving is perfectly fine.
Oh, thank goodness for that. I was worried. I was very worried. I mean, well, in that case, they better fix that before they start putting those sort of computers in any other cars.
Well, there's a big recall at the moment. I can't remember the make. I think it was Chrysler.
Well, that is a problem. I'm glad you highlighted that, Rob. You've done a service to the public.
Have I?
I think you have. You've just done your first public service.
Do I get anything?
No. No, but I think it's time in the programme to do Ask Any Question. The Great Whale is here, or the Oracle, as I like to call myself, where we invite you to either email, Facebook us a question, tweet me a question at jameswhaleradio.co.uk, and we put it on the programme, because, of course, any question can have an answer. I can answer any question. Right, I'm all ears. Off you go.
Mike Carrington.
Hello, Mike.
Is it right to say man up?
I think so.
Okay. Erica North. Do you know Erica?
Yes, Erica North, well-known lady DJ, of course, is Erica North, yes.
She wants to know, how does Mrs. W put up with you?
Well, she's very lucky. She realises how lucky she is.
Jill Thompson. Why has the defence budget been cut but foreign aid increased?
Has foreign aid been increased? I thought it had been ring-fenced. I'm not sure that it's been increased, but they do say that foreign aid is used in all kinds of ways now. Quite often the foreign aid budget comes back to this country because it's used to buy goods and services from the United Kingdom for people in need in other countries. And also, I think the government believe that by giving aid to certain countries stops terrorism from becoming a problem in those countries. They've got all sorts of reasons, but I do tend to think that, you know, if we are finding it difficult to survive without some of the drastic cuts that are being made at the moment, maybe a couple of billion pounds taken off the overseas budget might not be a bad thing. I don't think it would, as long as we're very, very careful about where our overseas budgets are spent, and they're not going into the pockets of other dictators and allowing them to buy yachts and private jets, which is what has happened in the past with the money that you and I have paid in our taxes, then I think it's good to give aid to countries that can't help themselves as much as we can. But I think some of the countries that get aid from us actually don't deserve it, and probably deep down the aid doesn't go to the people that it should go to. That was a rather long-winded answer to that question, so I apologise.
Andy Harris.
Andy.
Conwy County Council are going to make it a law that people cannot feed the seagulls and will fine you. Do you think the general public have been fined enough?
Yeah, but I think you'd be flipping stupid to feed seagulls and to feed any wild animal, whether it's foxes or hedgehogs or badgers. Feeding a wild animal, or even to a certain extent, birds, because once you feed, and I do feed the birds, and I now don't feed them so much, and I put lots of places where they can drink out because they're in need of water more often than they are of food. But you know, and I wish people would keep their flipping cats inside as well. There are far too many domestic cats allowed to run havoc through the countryside. That may be another story, another question. But feeding all wild animals doesn't help the animal. It makes them reliant on human beings, and that puts an animal in danger. So, yeah, I'm all for finding people who feed wild animals.
Okay. Brian Wolfgang Woodworth. Has the internet created a generation of selfish, impatient, and arrogantly rude people, or is it down to other social factors?
No, I think you just mixed with the wrong sort, mate. I mean, Brian, probably having a name like that doesn't help. People have always been, there have always been some people who are, as you describe them, selfish and whatever you said. But the majority aren't. And, yeah, you know, if you sit in a room watching television all day, or even sit in a room listening to the radio all day, or sit in a room playing computer games all day, it will make you a little insular, won't it?
Was that a dig at me?
Yeah, it was.
Okay.
I mean, let's face it. You don't have any real friends. You've just got people you speak to on computers. You don't, you know, you don't actually know and physically associate with human beings, do you?
Yeah, but it's just easy to delete people then.
See what I mean? You know, one day you will be a sad old man living surrounded by computers, but you won't have anybody to give you a cuddle.
I can cuddle my computer. It's nice and warm when you leave it on all day.
See? I don't think there's much hope for you, but, you know, one day maybe you'll learn the error of your ways.
Pat Makisha. That's a good name.
Hello, Pat.
This is more asking some advice, Mr. Whale.
Yes, I'm always happy to give advice.
As you're a broadcasting legend...
True.
Me, I'm getting married in September. Any advice about my speech would be great.
Now, is Pat presumably is a man?
Yes.
Okay. Because it's funny, isn't it? Brides don't give speeches, do they?
They sort of do nowadays.
Do they?
Yeah.
I don't get invited to weddings anymore because I always upset people. So I don't know. I haven't been to a wedding for years. No, I'm not looking for invitations to weddings. I don't like weddings. Full of drunk and badly behaved people who happen to be related to friends of yours, probably the bride or the groom, and you end up having to say, look, why don't you just off? And I hate weddings. Weddings where people, and their kids are so badly behaved at weddings. Oh, what was the question? Oh, about the speech, yeah. Keep it, if you're no good at telling jokes, don't put jokes in and then tell them badly. Keep it simple. Just give yourself a few notes of the people you feel you must mention. And as soon as you can, find an excuse to get everybody to raise their glasses, get up and drink a toast to your beautiful bride, and then sit down and shut the f*** up. That's my advice.
Okay, well, I've run out of questions now.
Well, we've run out of programme, so let's thank the fabulous Beverly Knight for spending some time with us today, and let's all try and go and see her in Memphis, and possibly even Cats, when she goes into Cats as well. And if you fail to do that, look out for her touring next year.
That's it, I think.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're listening to the James Whale Radio Show. For more information, visit www.jameswhaleradio.co.uk. Why not check us out on facebook.com/JamesWhaleRadioShow or follow James on Twitter @TheJamesWhale. James Whale, the voice of reason.